I don't know if, I don't think we need this. Okay, my name is Larry Vogel. I know a lot of you anyway. The reason I'm introducing Ron is because I've known him for quite a while. I worked with him in the program, which he's director of, Concordia Seward, the Center for Indian Ministries and Studies. For 2 years, my wife and I taught on the Rosebud Sioux Reservation, and Ron was sort of our single-handed support group and a good friend and a real help in many instances. I'd like to just explain real briefly what the Center for Indian Ministries and Studies is and who Ron is before he gets started. The center was started in 1972 under the direction and because of the work of Ralph Red Fox, Northern Cheyenne Indian, who was a student at that time at Concordia Seward, also with the help of George Wollenberg, district president of the Montana district, Chuck Dull, who was a prophet, Concordia Seward at that time, a few other people. The program was started in light of the fact that there are a number of LCMS congregations in areas where there is a sizable Indian population in close proximity to those congregations, and very little, if any, ministry was being focused toward the Indian communities in those areas. To keep it brief, they had five general goals at the inception of the program. The first was to foster greater intercultural awareness, understanding, and appreciation between white Lutheran Christians and Indian people. Second was to provide needed skills for people in the church who work within or near Indian communities. Thirdly, to develop programs of teacher education and pre-professional training in conjunction with Indian people so that the programs were not simply developed by the people at Concordia Seward or someplace else and dropped into the Indian community, but were developed in conjunction with Indian people so that there was input from the people who would be ministered to. Fourth, to develop new and existing resource services for Indian ministry with congregations and districts. And last of all, to facilitate the development of principles for gospel proclamation and Christian living within Indian communities. That's basically the setup of the Center for Indian Ministries and Studies in terms of goals. Ron has been with that center since a month after it got started. He's been in the capacity of sort of associate director or assistant director for some time, and later on as field coordinator, and now is, what's your official title? Director. Okay, director of the Center for Indian Ministries and Studies, Ron Wagoner.
Quite an honor to be here. Hope you don't mind if I use my notepad here, because when Larry and I worked this thing through, I wanted to remember some of the things I wanted to talk about. What I want to give you now is a brief sketch of some of the concerns we have when we talk about Indian ministry within our church right now. One of the concerns is the Indian people's image of Christian churches. The history of the Christian church Indian people has not been a very positive one, and we can go into that later. Another one is the image Indian people have of Christians, Anglo-Christians. I'm trying to differentiate between the church structure and the people that attend or go to church in that structure. Indian people understanding of the synod, headquarters St. Louis, versus denominations. Lutherans, which brand are you? This type of thing. You mean there's more than one of you? And Lutheranism has not had a long history with Indian people, except for a few scattered areas. And so they say, you're Lutheran. And here comes another person. Well, I thought he was Lutheran. And, well, that kind of thing. Understanding the differences between Lutheranisms. Another problem is the change in Indian cultures themselves. So, I mean, you people have gone to materialistic values. Some have gone to the control element, and some are going back now to traditional values. They say we've lost everything else. We've got to get back to where we started from so we can start all over again and get back who we are. It is not true. If you've seen them one, you've seen them all. It's not true. There are 240 different Indian, recognized Indian tribes, groups, or bands. 240 plus. There's more than that, actually. Some of the concerns we have regarding Anglo workers. One, we need more workers. 4 years ago, we had 25 worker priests in three states or three districts. Now we have two. The work in the areas has created problems for some, especially they ran into an area where English is a second language, and that means that the majority of Indian people will use English only if they have to in their homes, in their conversation with everybody that use Indian language. And so this becomes very difficult when you try to work with them because you're using a different vocabulary than you're used to. And all these problems come into play when you try to minister with people. The cultural values and conflicts, what we call cultural shock, they're different. They value some things we don't value, and we value things that they don't value. The knowledge of the past history of our workers, if they would understand or know some of the past history of the churches with Indian people, they would know why some of these responses were coming back to them. They would understand some of this. First time I go on the reservations, usually two questions are asked me. One is how much land will it take, will you take from us for you to build your church, and how much will it cost us for you to build your church? You know, and it's and I never come up with that idea or that concept. You know, I don't even try to play down that I'm a quote an employee of the church, things like that. Because I know this history, and so I don't bring this up. And yet, once they find out I'm Lutheran Christian, the assumption is right away, well, why are you different than the Catholics and the Presbyterians and the Episcopalians and things of this nature? That's what they do, and they're Christian. Well, you know, we expect you to do the same. Going back to culture, values, and conflicts, there is a different way of functioning in the Indian culture, in the Indian world. Our values, our norms, tell us or teach us how we act, respond to various stimuli. Well, in the Indian world, you can stand like a sore thumb by doing some of those things. You try to understand what their culture is, what they value, and you try to lead your life so that you can accept and even participate in some of them, like into a powwow, you know, sitting for long periods of time, drinking lots of coffee, not going to the bathroom very many times, you know, things like that. You learn things like that. And so when you get into Indian cultures, depends on which culture you're into, of course, but you learn certain things that you need to know to function in that culture. We have a need for models, adequate models for ministry. Now, we could look at the foreign mission field, but right now we haven't, because we've said this has been our home mission field, okay? And basically, the assumption is that they should become part of the melting pot, and without the reality that it's really a tossed salad. So our models have been hard to come by. It's the question is how to. How do you minister? How to minister? Whenever we find a person who's really sensitive to some of the issues, background, history, and concerns of Indian people, as well as his own personal convictions, how do you get those convictions across? If you become sensitive to what's happened, you don't want to be culturally alienated. So the question mark is, how do you do it? You become insecure in a way of just being able to minister. There's a great need for support systems. Like I mentioned, we had 25 at one time. We have two now, workers. Part of that is they got lost. Lost. Mentally lost. Not physically lost. Another way of saying that, what am I doing here? this is so different. I'm having a hard time just existing. That explains it. We come back to that. Another problem we have is doctrine versus culture, and this is a hard one to pinpoint. It's my hunch, it's my belief, that we carry a lot of cultural baggage with us. And, for example, to use page 5 and 15, not necessarily is the best approach to any people that don't even understand the English language. Okay? Another one, the vocabulary we use. Sanctification, one of the Indian students on campus, took about 1 hour to get across the idea of sanctification. He said, oh, I know what that means, and he gave the Indian word for it, which I can't pronounce, but it means, as a mother hen would gather the chicks under her arm or her wing and protect them and keep them. You know, it took a whole hour to get to that one concept. Sanctification meant nothing, but all of a sudden that Indian word meant a lot. Things of this nature, the vocabulary, the time values. You know, to us, like I come here late, and I look at my watch, I have 5 after right now, I don't know what you have, but apparently my watch is wrong, all right? It's not, you know, for us, time is, we run our whole society on time. Indian people say, if it's worthwhile doing, it'll be done. Don't worry about it, you know? If we're going to meet at 8 o'clock, you know, have a hand game or something like that, if people get there an hour or two later, that's all right. You know, time isn't important, people is important. You know, this is a different type of concept. The material used in the worship services, we use the organ, you know, mostly. We use some guitars, things of that nature, but Indian people, their form of music is really with the drum, with rattles, or with, I can't remember what you call them, but these little clickers types of things. Why not use that type of thing for a worship service? Another one we really have a problem with is work ethic. And this is a hard one to explain to Indian people why it's so important to us to beat our brains out getting something done. Maybe, you know, most of you here have a very easy time in classes and things like that, you know. And so you understand what I'm saying. Another one, if you read early history, without exception, just about every early missionary condemned Indian religion. And if somebody would ask them, what are you condemning, they wouldn't know how to describe it. In other words, they really did not know what they were condemning, and that's been one of our problems. Some studies in South Dakota have shown that Indian religion in the Old Testament has a lot of parallels to it. Now, is there any way we can use that? We don't know yet, because we don't even know what Indian religion is yet. We have need for Indian workers. We also have need for the decisions for Indian ministry to be made in the right areas. Like, I was reading through the minutes of from between 1917 and 1932, Synod had a board for Indian missions. It's ironic to see that most of the decisions regarding Indian ministry was done not being on site, not having any input from the site. Now, at that time, you say transportation is a problem and things like that. But it's still a problem. Who makes decisions regarding any ministry? Thus far, it's been the whites making for the Indians. And if you understand anything about the power plays in the United States and the institutions, you can understand how that really fits in. We have a problem with philosophy. Do we encourage border town, which are those white congregations surrounding Indian peoples, what we call border town? Do we encourage that type of ministry, or do we encourage indigenous type of ministry? We haven't come to that conclusion yet. We don't know. We need a balanced ministry in word and deed. We find people that go to extremes on both ends. And Indian people themselves, Lutheran Indians, LCMS Indians, say, listen, the only way to go is a ministry to the entire person. And then we run into perhaps the last one, which is the most confusing, but it's been the one that's been around for a long time, and that is, how many Indians have you saved today? If you can get so many people into a church, okay. I know of congregations, not Lutheran, of course, that kind of boast of the numbers. But I also know that they give $5 apiece to everyone that come to church. I also know if you come to church, when you leave, you can get some food or something like that. It happened in Wyoming. Somebody from here, Wyoming? You know, I can go and tell you a lot of those stories. You know, they got a lot of numbers in church. That's great. You know, how many baptized? Well, there's also a little game with that one that was around about 20 years ago. You get paid for being baptized by some denomination. So this one kid was baptized 5 times. That's all right. He made $25 on it. You know, that's, you know, when you play a number game, you kind of lose concept of what it's all about. And I don't want to get caught in that. I'll turn to Larry for some of his experiences at Spring Creek. Larry?
I don't want to take a whole lot of time, but we thought it might be helpful just to share some actual occurrences. Not actual occurrences so much as an actual setting of ministry. When I graduated from Concordia Seward, my wife and I taught for 2 years on the Rosebud Sioux Reservation in South Dakota. Previous to that, while I was at Seward, I'd had a couple of summers' experience working on reservations and some other experiences during vacation breaks, things like that. So I entered it having some idea of what was ahead, but even with that limited knowledge, I was surprised in many ways. I think I ran across two big problems, which probably hold true for most situations, ministerial situations going on, and I'm using a broad understanding of ministry there. First of all, Ron alluded to the lack of support groups. We were the only white people in our community. Our nearest friends who could share our cultural background were 35 miles away. In the community itself, we were working in a school, and this is getting into the second problem area, which is the multifaceted type of a barrier you face in terms of the problems people are up against. When we talk about evangelism in Professor Mathias's class, we consider, you know, the greatest problem people have is their spiritual welfare, and I agree wholeheartedly with that. But oftentimes, many other things get in the way, and it becomes difficult even to get to that issue with when you're approaching a home that's got alcoholic parents. When you're dealing with kids in a classroom who don't get to bed consistently until 3 o'clock in the morning, when you're dealing with people who grew up speaking Lakota Sioux and didn't learn English until they were getting older, and therefore all their thinking has to be translated first through the Lakota understanding. We had even a third problem in terms of language there, and that was that as young children were learning English, what they actually were learning was as an English dialect. They learned to speak English. They were using English words, but oftentimes they were placing these words within a Lakota grammatical structure, and so that when they came to school thinking they were talking English, all of a sudden they found that they could make no sense at all out of written materials because they didn't understand the accepted rules of syntax and word order and use of prepositions. Lakota Sioux doesn't even have, they've got about 5 adjectives. And kids run across adjectives and just go nuts. And this really also relates to, as Ron was saying, the worship service. I remember one time we brought a couple of friends with us to worship in a Lutheran church that was off the reservation in South Dakota, and I can guarantee they were entirely lost simply because we use a church lingo and a church jargon. It to us it's very familiar. We've grown up with it, but to someone coming in cold, the way to do evangelism is not to bring them to church. We found that out pretty quick. But then that presents the problem of how do you go about a balanced word ministry and also live the life of faith so that you don't alienate people by your deeds. And that's the sort of area that I think is run across day after day in this type of ministry situation. We could go into a reservation with a Kennedy evangelism program and we'd fall on our face because many times people wouldn't even understand the first question. What are we talking about, this heaven business? They have one idea of heaven, maybe, or they maybe don't have any idea of heaven. A final problem has to do with the border congregation. If I could just sketch what had gone on in that particular congregation in the few years previous to our coming and while we were there. In terms of ministry, they did do this much. They had a VBS program every summer for a week in which they invited Indian children. There was no follow-up to that, however. The people in the congregation had several things that caused problems, and I think these are found in many other reservation or border town situations. One was there was the threat of loss of land. This was a rural congregation. If you've heard anything at all about some of the court battles that have gone on around reservations within the last 5 years, there's an astronomical number. Farmers leased land oftentimes. The reservations that are outlined on the maps are really not the true reservations. Legally, the reservations are in almost every instance larger than that, but land was leased, usually on 99-year leases, to white farmers. Now, those farmers make up the congregations that are in border communities, and they feel very threatened by the rise of self-determination on the part of Indian people, and also the rising number of court battles over land that surrounds reservation as to who is truly the legal owner. Second thing is just plain fear. There were many people who did want to minister, who did want to share their faith, but they were afraid to do it. They didn't know how to do it. Another was basic ignorance, and that goes along with the fear. When they realized that they were facing people with an acutely different cultural background, it became very confusing to the point where no action was always the easiest course. When you're trying to decide what you can do without alienating someone, before long you get to the point where you decide maybe it's better not to risk alienation and do nothing at all. I want to get back to Ron now. I think he's got some things to share, basically about the direction that the Missouri Synod and the Center for Indian Ministries and Studies is going in right now in terms of Indian ministry.
We could really stand up here and share a lot of horror details type of things, but that isn't the whole story. Some of the districts that are involved in Indian ministry right now, in some form or the other, are the Northwest District, Cal Nevada, Hawaii District, Colorado District, Wyoming District, Montana District, North Dakota, South Dakota, Kansas, Nebraska, Minnesota South, Wisconsin North. These are all districts that have something going on. It may not be complete ministries, but they have something going on. Pull out from some of those, the Northwest, they have Don Johnson, who's the only Indian pastor we have in our synod. He's not. I made that mistake before. We have another guy that went through the system, and he will have nothing to do with Indian people. But that's another problem. Don Johnson is a macaw up at Nia Bay. And right below him on the Quileute Reservation is Bill Heineke, who was called there by the tribal council to establish a Christian day school. And it looks like he's going to be starting this next fall with at least 4 grades. Don has a neat problem in that his church has grown. Now he has Indian and white. The Northwest Indian people, the situation, background of that is different than the plains, the northern plains, all right? They've had more association with whites. They accepted more of the white or Anglo values and norms, but yet they want to maintain their identity. They're still fishers, and they run into the Judge Bolt. You know, Judge Bolt was for them, if you're from the Northwest, and if you're a sports fisherman, you may not like Indian people. But anyway, their church is growing. They've outgrown the single wide trailer house they were using as a church, and now they're trying to find some land and to build a structure. One of the things that they're doing is working with the tribal council to identify what kind of structure is needed by the community. In other words, when we build the structure, it's not going to be only used as a church, but it's also going to be used by the community. And if you think of the ramifications that does, as a PR-wise, that the church is finally asking us what's important to us as well, okay? So that's kind of a neat problem. And kind of anxious to see what Don does with that situation. He's been involved with the schools, with welfare in the reservation. He has volunteer workers come to the reservation, volunteer, no pay, for a year or two. Kind of nice situations. Bill down in Quileute, working, developing the school. Another one in Wyoming, Don Brenn, Reverend Don Brenn, is located at Dubois, who's also working on the Wind River Reservation, which has the Arapaho Shoshone. Crow Heart is a small community, very, very small community, between Riverton, which is like the chief city on the reservation, and going up to Dubois, up to the Tetons. There's a mission station there, starting there, and then also at Fort Washakie, which is the tribal headquarters for the old tribe, starting a mission station there. Another one would be Wiley Scott. I don't remember what tribe he's from. He's from the Southwest. Wiley is working at Haskell Indian School, which is a BIA junior college in Lawrence, Kansas. Wiley works with a group called LIGHT. It's called Lutheran Indians Gathering and Helping Together. And it's kind of a neat organization. The Lutheran Indians that he works with, the student body, come from our Apaches, and they're Wisconsin Synod. And through that group, he's been able to expand from 20 students up to 40 and 50 students. Just because, but Wiley spends a ton of time with them. He and his wife, Karen, finally got a house that a guy put down the down payment, paid for it. You know, they don't have any money to work with, basically. Somebody gave him an airport limousine, so they can go on trips, things like that. It's the only car he knows that has 15 doors, four wheels. Another place I'd like to point out would be Wisconsin, which in 1898, Indian people, Stockbridge Muncy, asked the pastor there, LCMS pastor, if he'd take over from the Presbyterians. And we have the three oldest Indian congregations, Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod congregations, are in the Stockbridge Muncy area, up in that area. And Sims, starting in 72, our philosophy is a little bit different than most everybody else. One, we're set up different. We're working with the school and with different districts. All the other programs were within a separate, you know, a single district. So we work cross district lines. Our input are from the different districts and Indian people and the school itself. Some of the things we're into is on the sensitizing and awareness, we develop assimilation game, if you know what assimilation gaming is, on reservation life on the Northern Plains. We use that. We have speaking engagements to go around to different congregations or schools, whatever it may be. We also have the personal experiences in which some people have said, you know, what do you do? I'm interested in this. And what we'll do is we take them along with us. They sit in on the meetings we sit in. They, you know, stay where we stay. You know, sometimes we take our sleeping bags along. We stay sleep on floors. You know, it's really interesting when you get into this area that, for me, I guess I learned what it meant to be human again. I kind of lost that for a while. Another one that we're doing is working with pre- and post-education. In other words, for undergraduate students at Concordia, if they're interested in Indian ministry, we're working with Multicultural Lutheran Education Conferences, Board for Parish Education, and also working with the school. NCATE is our accrediting agency, says you have to have multicultural ed. And what we're doing is developing a program whereby these people will be able to function in another culture. And specifically, we give them specific training for Indian culture. We also had requests, which we haven't been able to answer, but now we will be able to answer, from pastors, from teachers that have graduated, and say, I have a call to this certain place, but I don't know anything about it. Will you train me or teach me what's going to happen and, you know, that area? So we're developing that right now, pre- and post-training. We have Indian students on campus, scattered throughout the grades, some graduates. From that, one of our graduates brought his sister down, and she and all of her kids, seven kids, were baptized, and another Indian family was baptized. Confirmation for some of them. Most of our students are going either into teacher training, social work. One girl made up her mind last semester she wants to get a master's in computer science. And she had no math background when she came to Seward, very little. But we've run into some excellent profs that have helped her. And I was teaching a class last semester, and I say, Rebecca, and here she'd be sitting back from the table looking down, doing her math in my class. You know, that gets me kind of angry. No, it doesn't at all. But she's really interested in it. She finally figured out what she wanted to do, and now she's putting all of her energy into that. We have another guy that attended Concordia, Missouri for 2 years. We found money for him to do that. He's now at Seward, and he's going into the ministry. He wants to go into the ministry, preaching ministry. He is Ojibwa Santi Sioux. We're working with a border congregation in a six-month program. What we're dealing with is dealing with cognitive and affective, working with values clarification and grace and race workshops, things of this nature, to allow them, our purpose is to allow them to minister and to go into the whole history behind this congregation. There's a lot of anxiety there, hostility, but hopefully after 6 months, we'll be able to do something in this area, or they will be able to do something. We're working on a statement, which we're pulling people together from all over the country. He said, what does it mean in your ministry? We're trying to get this thing together, and that's a hard one to do. Also, we're working with a group on a Northern Cheyenne reservation that this one person has had Kennedy training, and what they will be doing is meeting with like 10 Indian couples or families, homes, preferably older ones, and through a meeting with them once every 2 weeks for about five times, then go into a whole process, which we're trying to do is take Kennedy and to blend it in. We hope to start that next month. Those are some of the things we're in. This is very brief. We just finished the task force. Board for Missions had an Indian Ministry task force that met for 2 years. We just finished 2 weeks ago. We have recommendations. They go to the Board for Missions, and they'll be printed up in the Synodical workbook, as well as the report. And rather than go through that, if you'd wish me to later on give you some of them. But if any of you have questions or you want to clarify something we've said, or be open to that. He's lost. That is lost. He's no longer part of them. The reason is because he made the decision. You know, they gave him a chance to come back. There was also another person that turned into an alcoholic. He was put into a white congregation in Kansas City, and he couldn't handle it. Not where he is, he himself. If he would choose to come back, he would be welcome back. But because of his decision, and what he's basing his decision on right now, that he can't go back. But if he would say, listen, I want to identify back with my people again, then he could go back. But the decision's with him. He is forcing himself out right now. Does that make sense? Because... yeah, you know, I figured you'd know what I'm talking about. Yeah. There is always hope. There is always work. The question mark is, how do you deal with it? If we come with the same philosophies we used 100 years ago, we're going to fall flat in our face. That's it. It's taken me, did I tell you about how much land and how much it will cost for us to, okay, It took me 4 years. And finally, this one guy came up to me. The guy that originally asked me the question, he said, "Ron, now I know you're speaking the truth." 4 years. And I've known this guy for 4 years. And when I first met him, you know, he said how much land and how much it will cost us. And went to, any people had a celebration up on a guy named Austin Two Moons Ranch. The celebration was at 100 years late, 100-year anniversary of Custer's, he lost that one. And it was at that celebration when this guy came up to me. He was a tribal council member. He said, "Ron, I finally realized that I finally came to the conclusion that you are speaking the truth." People, you know, first time I go up the reservation, depends, again, the reservation, okay? They will sit down and talk. It'll be surface talk, strictly surface. They will tell me either what they want me to hear or what they think I want to hear. All right? And it's ironic because now I know what's happening, but yet I can't tell that person. I said, you know, I can't cut through that thing. I can't do it. I've got to go through the process. You have to go through the process. And it takes me, I usually figure meeting three times, like once a month. Okay? And on the third time, we'll start talking about things that are important. It's usually then. Unless I've been introduced by somebody. If someone introduces me, and you know the introduction, then we've cut through that. In other words, somebody else has confirmed me as an individual, affirmed my existence and who I what I stand for. But yes, there's stuff to do right now. And it's harder, because we've made it harder, okay? There, all reservations have those. Okay, it depends on which religion. You're talking about the Native American Church, I assume. Okay, the Piote. Okay, yeah, and see, the Native American religion is not an old religion. Yeah, okay. Tribal religions, if you go back that far, you still have your medicine men. You still have your healers. And people have condemned them right and left. And I'm not so sure I'm ready to condemn them. One is they use herbs, you know, medicines, natural medicines. And it's ironic that our doctors now are learning from that. You know, so this curing that we assume to be supernatural from an outside force really has been available to us all the time. And Indians knew how to use it, and we just didn't know how to use it. You know, that's one of the things, okay? So when we look at religion, we have to know what we're dealing with, all right? Second of all, we have to know where the conflicts are. Where are they? The study in South Dakota brought out that the Old Testament and Indian religions have a lot of parallels. They have the laws, they have the promise of the better life to come, they have the promise of a new world. You know, they have a lot of the prophecies we have in the Old Testament. And see, they don't pinpoint what it is. You know, it's not pinpointed. You know, it's like, for example, the Sioux are going back to Wisconsin where they came from. That's not it. You know, Sioux originated in Wisconsin. They're not a Plains tribe. The Cheyennes are not a Plains tribe. They came from Wisconsin a long time ago. But the thing is, we haven't picked up on that stuff. I don't cuss and swear. I don't believe in it. People have asked me why. I can say it's my religion, but I can go beyond that. That's one way. Another one is when they know you're, quote, Christian, and that term floats. Like, for example, before I got down the Wind River Reservation for the first time, the Cheyennes already told them, and they were ready for me. All right? Things float. They know who you are. All you have to say to one individual is, my light, my guidance is Christ. Okay, now they may have to accept that, but they will remember that. Especially if my actions follow my words. One statement on the reservation. We hear a lot of Christians, but we don't see them. That's why it takes me 4 years to get through. Some cases. They have to see my actions as well as what I'm saying. I don't carry a Bible around. Let me tell you some things I don't, then I'll tell you what I do, all right? I don't dress up on the reservation. I don't wear a white shirt, dark horn hand tie, and a coat. One time I went to a meeting like that, and like, for example, the Cheyennes, nobody would sit next to me. They all sat away from me. You know, I knew I'd taken a bath and all that good stuff. I was okay there. Finally, Bob Bailey said, I want to introduce to you Ron Wagner from Concordia Teachers College. Oh, we thought he was from the coal companies. By the way I dressed. After that, we started talking. Went to a powwow. I knew not to wear my coat, all right? I wore dark slacks, white shirt, dark four hand tie. But I didn't ride a bicycle. You know? The Mormons are here again. Yes. Don't wear that, Ron. Don't you know better than that? Well, I really didn't, you know. So I don't do that. Okay. So things you do and things you don't do. Those are some of the things you learn you don't do. One of the things you do is that you identify where the Indian Christians are on the reservation, and there are those people. There are those people. And you start dialoguing with them. You start sharing faith with them. And then as you go meet other people that person is in association with, you start dialoguing with them. I'm in a different position than, for example, a border town would be or a worker on the reservation would be, things like this. I cannot maintain the relationship that I feel should be happening if I am actively witnessing to them. One, because I work with 18 different reservations, okay? And for me to develop that relationship is very hard for me. What I encourage others to do is to get into the home. Larry, I go up to his place, drop in on him something sometimes. And one time, what was your janitor's name? Vince Whitequill was up there, and they had the Bible out on the table. I remember that very vividly when I walked up the steps and Vince was there. This thing about witnessing that we're starting in the Cheyenne next week, or next month, is something that is just a sharing thing, a non-threatening thing. I know of Indian people who are not Christian that can quote more Bible passages than I can.
Don't have it before there. I really don't think it's possible. Ron, thank you. Very good.
Well,